Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDillane, and I'm lucky enough to be here today with award-winning journalist and novelist Caroline Overington.
Hello!
Caroline, you have a new book coming out.
I do. It's called The One Who Got Away. And when we're talking about it, I'm always saying, who is the one who got away? That's the trick. Who is it? Who is it? When you're reading the book, the idea you're trying to think all the time is, who is the one that got away? And also, what did they get away with? That's the trick. That's the thing that's supposed to keep you reading.
There is a lot of uncertainty throughout the book.
A lot of twists.
Yes. I was constantly trying to figure out exactly where we stood, exactly who had done what, exactly who was alive and who was not alive.
Because I'm trying all the time when I'm writing it. I wanted to have two big twists. So I wanted you to be reading along, to be pretty sure you think you know where you're going, and bam, then suddenly you're like, what? So I think I did that first twist, really, I caught myself by surprise. When I realised what was going to happen, I thought, wow. And then I wanted there to be another twist at the end. So just when you thought, oh, okay, now hang on a minute, I think I figured it out, bang, get you again. So that was the aim when I was writing it, to try to have two. Because I know most books, they have one and you're like, oh, but it comes right at the end. Whereas this, I wanted to make sure I twisted you twice.
I think you definitely pulled that off. Definitely two real game changer moments in the
book. I'm glad. That was the aim.
Can you tell the podcast listeners just a little idea of what the book is about?
So the idea is, this is the idea. You have a mum who looks like she's got it all going on. She's got everything going in her favour. She's got a fantastic husband. She's got a nice house. She's got two great kids. She's outside the school. She's dropping the kids off for the morning. And another mum comes and taps her on the shoulder and hands her an envelope. And the idea for the reader is, okay, what is that envelope going to say? What does that mum know? It's the worst kept secret in town. And then suddenly she has to confront that reality, what's going on. And she has to decide who to believe and also what to do. And those become the important parts of the story. What is she going to do? How is she going to react? Who is she going to believe?
Now, your experience as a journalist have in the past often been a huge inspiration in your writing. The whole time I was reading this, I kept wondering which parts were from true events.
Yes, because I have done a number of stories where these kinds of things happen. So it's no big mystery that somebody goes missing in the book, of course, and that has been a subject that I have covered as a journalist, definitely. You know, almost anyone will tell you this, that when someone goes missing, and we've all seen those cases even this year, when someone goes missing, for the people left behind, all they want is an answer. They just want to know. And I've met so many families over the years working as a journalist who were just like, I could deal with the truth, but what I can't deal with is not knowing, because not knowing sends your mind into really dark places. Because if you don't know, then you start imagining the worst possible scenario. And so you just feel, if I had the knowledge, if I could just be told, okay, this is what happened, or this is where he or she is, I could deal with that. But I can't deal with the torture of not knowing. Sometimes when I see, for example, everybody knows the story of Madeleine McCann, the little girl who went missing. Mm-hmm. Her parents could probably cope if they just knew what happened. But it's the not knowing. And I know that that was true with the Morecambe family. I did a lot of interviews with the Morecambes, Denise and Bruce, over the years when Daniel was missing. And Denise would say, I just can't even tell you the things that go through your mind when they're just missing. And now they know and they can move on. It's tough, of course it is. You want him back more than anything. But knowing at least, okay, we've been able to bury him, we've been able to put it to rest, someone is in prison, to the best of our ability we can get on. And that sense of someone being missing and not knowing, I just wanted to explore that a whole lot more, what it's like for the people who are left behind.
Well, at least if you know you're dealing with one true tragedy as opposed to countless possible
scenarios. Yeah. And human beings have a tendency to think the worst.
Yeah.
And I sometimes, you know, I was listening the other day to that case in Melbourne where the guy was missing for 5 years and then they found him on the property in his own house, caught in a little gap between the house, the back of the house and a wall. He was trapped in there, yes. And he was like a really famous missing person in Victoria. He was a young man. He disappeared from his house one day, or their parents had come home and he was gone and they hadn't been able to find him. And for 5 years, there was all these sightings of him in Queensland, and they travelled widely trying to find him. And in the end, he was found. He was in the house the whole, well, not in the house, but in this gap behind the house the whole time. And I remember thinking, as tragic as that is, as shocking as that is, it's better to know.
Yeah. Well, you want to deal with reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The imagination can be a scary place.
Of course.
Well, in this book, the media plays a fairly big role.
Yeah.
And you've got some famous Hollywood stars. And I thought part of that might have been from your experience dealing with...
Because I spent all of last year living in California. I was working for the Australian Women's Weekly and I was doing celebrity interviews in Hollywood. So interviewing like Oprah Winfrey and Kate Winslet and a range of other big stars. And it occurred to me sometimes, how many times have we seen a situation where a big celebrity puts their name to something and then suddenly it becomes a big story because it's got the backing of a big celebrity. And so I wanted to build that into this book. So we do have a big celebrity in Hollywood who gets involved in this case because she happens to know the person who's missing. Quite by chance, she knew the person who's missing years and years and years ago when she was just a young up-and-coming actor. And when she finds out about this case, she gets involved. And I thought to myself, it's unfair, isn't it? Because how many times you're just trying to get publicity for your little cause and you can't, and then suddenly a big name gets involved and sucks up all the oxygen. And so that's exactly what happens here.
And it shouldn't matter. It should be about
it shouldn't matter. But because she's so famous, she's able to draw the media's attention in a way the family isn't able to do, because they're, you know, trying to get publicity and they can't, except for, you know, in their little local paper and so on. But then when she gets involved, suddenly bang, it's a massive big story. And I think that that's really true, especially in America, where they're obsessed with celebrity culture.
Yeah.
Just obsessed. Like, celebrities are just... I actually couldn't believe when I moved to Hollywood how big that whole industry is. I mean, these stars are just so massive. And when you go to these interviews to interview them, there'd be like 100 people in the room. Like, everybody's got a job. Someone's job is to bring the coffee, and the other person's job is, you know, to turn on the microphone, and someone's got a job to handle the shoes. I once saw Mariah Carey in Hollywood, and she would have had an entourage of 120 people. She doesn't go anywhere without 120 people surrounding her, and it was extraordinary. Whereas in Australia, we have our stars. They tend to just turn up. They just like knock on the door and there they are, and you do your interview and off you go. Whereas in America, it's an industry. It's massive.
That's so, I mean, it's with all the stuff in the media just lately with the Johnny Depp apology.
Yes.
I found that really interesting and wondered how maybe in another country,
exactly,
we would let it slide.
And when I was reading the court documents for the Johnny Depp case, you know, when he brought the dogs in without declaring them, and they said that they had no idea they weren't declared because they don't book their own travel, they don't book their own hotels, they don't book their own flights.
Yeah.
She doesn't handle her own passport. So when she's going somewhere, somebody else packs her bag and sticks all her important travel documents in the front pocket.
And so makes all the arrangements, yeah.
How great would that be?
It would be awesome.
It would be so... And that was the thing about Mariah Carey. When I went to see her on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, she was getting a star on the Walk of Fame, and you put your hands in the concrete and you do all that, and there were people who were paid to open doors so that she doesn't have to even open the door on her way through a room. There's someone already standing there to open the door for you.
I mean, opening doors, that's hard work.
It's just, well, everything just has to flow just so, you know. Everything has to just be so the carpet is rolled out and all she has to do is walk on it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a different world. I don't think I would enjoy it, having that number of people around me all the time, arriving in a whole convoy of cars and, you know, everybody jumps out of the car at the same time, all the car doors open and off you go.
I think it would be really fun for about 2 weeks.
And then you'd be stressed. Yeah. You'd be stressed. You want your privacy back, wouldn't you?
Yeah, for sure. I found that a really interesting part of this book. And also, I think with the exception of your last book, Can You Keep a Secret, which was partially set In the US. This one is pretty much fully set in the US.
It's absolutely set in the US. And that's because we spent the last year living there. Because I took my whole family over there. We lived in California for a year just doing these celebrity interviews for the Women's Weekly, which was an amazing opportunity, but also gave me a chance because all of my other books had been set mainly in Australia. And so this gave me a chance to do a book that was set in the US, which also means that you can do your characters can have lots more money because in California they all have so much more money and they live in these grand houses and they have amazing cars and it's just a totally different world. It's not my world. And then suddenly living in it when you're doing these interviews, getting to know what it's like to have, you know, to live in a community where everybody is so rich and then everyone's got a mansion and everyone's got a fancy car. And I thought, I'm going to enjoy writing this book so much.
Scope for storytelling, because this book really does have, and I wish I'd written this quote down, but there's a quote from my favourite character in your book is the judge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And at some point he basically points out that this book really does have everything it's got. Sorry, the case.
The case has everything. Yes.
Yeah, like it's got beautiful, rich, famous people and sex, lies and videotapes.
Yes, exactly. And see, that's the thing. And he's a judge in a really affluent community. Normally what happens is, we see this in Australia too. Like when rich people go to court, it's a big story because it so rarely happens. So when you have something like the O.J. Simpson trial, part of the reason it's so big is because it's so rare to see seriously rich people have to face court. For some reason, they seem to be able to get out of it. So most of the business of court, if you go to court in Australia, it tends to be the underbelly. It tends to be people who are already down on their luck. Tends to be crimes associated with drugs or credit card fraud or social security fraud. That's the kind of thing we see. So when you have a case where it's a high profile family and there's a bit of money involved, that's why the media attaches, because it's really rare.
There's that element of, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yes, yeah. And also getting a window, having a bit of a peek into the lives of people
who you find so fascinating.
Are fascinating because they're rich and you suddenly get this window into people's lives. And so when you have, like we've had a couple of cases in Australia in the last couple of years where it's been what they call a society murder or a high profile murder, it's because it's so rare. Most murders occur, unfortunately, and most crime that they see in court occurs at a different level of society and we get used to seeing it. And so when you suddenly have a society one, everyone jumps on it because it's like, hang on, you're not immune. You have to face court like anyone else when this happens and your life will be stripped back. And maybe that's why the Johnny Depp story was so big too. It was a real window into you're not above the law.
Yeah, not in Australia.
Not here. That's right.
I wanted to talk a bit about just about the title, because we touched on this briefly when we started, but you were saying that the question is who is the one who got away in this, which I find so interesting because I thought it was like, it was clear cut for me. The one who got away for me was David from Lauren. Like, he for her was a relationship that she had when she was really young and it didn't work out and she was never really able to let go of that.
Right. So she thinks, I think initially Lauren, who's the main character in the book, thinks that he is her one that got away. You know, everybody, she says this in the book, doesn't she? Every one of us has one person in our lives who is our one that got away.
Like that one you check up on
the
on
one
Facebook
that you, yes, that's right. The one you think, would my life be different? How would my life be different if I had stayed with him? Like, would I be happier? Would things be better? How different would things be? And I think we all have one of those. And she thinks he is hers. So she goes on a pretty dedicated
hunt.
That's the perfect word. She hunts him down because she figures, if I don't land him, I'm never going to know whether in fact he was the one. And I think he was. And so, so initially the idea is he the one that got, is he her one that got away? But then later on you're thinking, oh, actually, no, is it a different character that got away? So that's the idea. You're kind of wondering to yourself, who is the one that got away and what do they get away with?
Yeah, that is the thing. I just felt myself on tenterhooks the whole way through.
Good, I'm glad.
Trying to really figure out, because there's so many little moments that drop little clues, and I'm trying to tread really carefully here because the last thing I'd want to do is spoil this for readers.
Spoilers alert!
Yeah, but I just felt that you were masterful with little, like, red herrings, like little moments, little comments from the kids that make you think, oh, I know it all now. Like,
I'm glad.
Where she's
and it's tricky. It's tricky to do. And in fact, you can't do it unless you've got really good editors working with you, because a number of times when you hand in them, see what happens when you write a book is you hand in the manuscript and then it comes back to you and you rewrite it and you send it back and it'll come back 8 or 9 times.
Yeah.
Because the editors will pick up things. They'll say, but hang on, if she says this here, then she must already know this that you said she didn't know before. And
continuity.
So then you have to think, oh, okay. So then you have to go back and make sure everything works, because if one piece of the puzzle falls out, and I think people do that also with books like Gone Girl and Girl on a Train, like I can't tell you the debates that I've had with girlfriends of mine saying, but she can't have done this because of that. You know, you have
you
pick it apart. And then they're like, no, because remember, he didn't know this and she didn't know that. And then you're like, oh, okay, so that, all right. And then that's the idea. You have to try and make all the bits fit together, but at the same time leave people thinking, but hang on, what about this?
There's always got to be room for another possibility as
right.
well. Like the best kind of thriller will have you sort of going between a couple of possibilities the whole way in the back of your mind. It could be that or it could
right.
be this.
Right. And sometimes, and I've met people who have said, for example, with Gone Girl, I picked it straight away. And others who have said, it's totally unbelievable. And that's what you want. You want there to be debate about people who thought straight away, I got it. And others who say, I don't believe a word of it. And others who say, I thought it should have been this, or I picked it in the start. And I think with The One Who Got Away, that's what we're dealing with. Like people, like one woman said to me, I guessed about halfway through, whereas my mum said, I didn't guess at all. And that's perfect. That's exactly what I want. A good mix.
Especially the final one.
You didn't get it?
Yes! I didn't guess at all. But a really good, and this is where you talk about the difference between like, the real difference between a twist in a story and a game-changing moment. Because I think about halfway through we have a game-changing moment where
we
see everything through a different lens and you're like, oh, I thought it was this type of story, but now I'm looking at this type of story. And so,
right.
But then at the end you have a real twist.
Yes, yes. And so that's if I can get a good mix of readers saying half of them guessed and the other half had no idea, and if I can get people debating as they currently are online whether or not it could possibly ever happen, or why didn't they do this, or why didn't do it, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That is exactly what you want, there to be really good debate about whether people think these things could ever happen, whether anybody ever would have predicted them.
I think you're going to get it.
I hope so. Well, I've just started to see it a little bit online now. Some people are on my Twitter and on my Facebook asking me this and that. And I'm like, exactly like you're saying now, don't give it away.
You have to be so careful. This is actually, we're doing this today on your publication day.
Which I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Because I was told that it was coming out on the 1st of May and we're not the 1st of May. And so there you go. When I was coming here today in the car, they said, it's your publication day. I was like, yay.
The book is out there.
Yes, it's out there. Doing its buzzing, its little buzzing bottom off. I know. I already had a few reviews this morning on Facebook and I was like, what? But sometimes people do get it early if they order it and it goes out a little bit early. So, it's great.
Some people, when they're super keen, they will just get it and they will read it.
Which is
great. They'll block out that time.
Yeah, which is great.
You told us a bit of this already, but I did want to ask you about your process and when you write, how much of a meticulous plotter are you, or do you freestyle it a bit, or like, did you know always the ending? Because it seemed like it could have gone a couple of ways.
No, because like what happens is you get so involved in your character, you don't even know what they're going to do. And then suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, that's what's going to happen. Like, it's almost like you're just a portal after a certain point. It's just coming through you and landing on the page, which is just great. Because I know people who plot, like who already know. And I wrote one book once where I knew what was going to happen, but I didn't know how I was going
to
get there.
And so
that was really interesting, because it was torture trying to get to that point. It would have been so easier to make something else happen. Whereas this one, I had no idea. And I was amazed. I was just amazed. And then when I knew what the ending was, that's when I had to go back and think, but hang on.
Does it work? Yeah.
And then you have to be very careful about things that character said. You have to make sure that at no point did they say something that is inconsistent with that ending.
Yes,
that's
because you
really
want that
difficult.
Domino effect. When the twist comes, you want people to think back, like flashback to all those little clues that were there all along that you didn't see.
Exactly. Yeah. And some of those you have to go back and put in because they weren't there originally. So you have to go back and put them back in and then take them out because they don't work. Yeah, it's this kind of, because I had never written a thriller before, I didn't realize how technical it actually is. It is, yeah. You know, the idea is you pick it up and you read it in 2 days. That's the plan, right?
Yeah.
But you don't realize that the poor writer has had to be agonizing over that technical process.
Yeah, I absolutely blows me away.
Good, I'm glad.
So this book, like Gone Girl and like Before I Go to Sleep and Girl on the Train, kind of fits into this new category that we're seeing rise up called domestic noir.
What do you call it? Domestic noir. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Right.
So,
right.
Because it's got those. There's usually a strong element of family, and it's really strongly relationship based, and they generally have a female main character. These are just things that it's a very new thing.
It's a new category. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
But I was just wondering, within that kind of, we've mentioned Gone Girl, but have you read others like that?
I have read all of them. I have read all of the ones that you just listed. Yeah. Yes, yes. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So it's kind of this idea of that what we see in people's families isn't necessarily what's really going on below the surface.
Yeah.
And that has happened to me, like in my own life. I have been blindsided by things that have gone on in people's lives. Like, I just did not expect that. Like, a friend will come and say, oh my god, you know, I just found out my husband's been having an affair for the past 5 years, and it's just like bang, and you would have never predicted it of that particular family. And I think particularly in the Facebook age and the Instagram age, everybody's putting on their best face and everybody's showing their wonderful holiday and their brand new kitchen and all that. But what's really going on? That's really fascinating.
Yeah, we've never had such a great medium to show perfection before.
And so everybody says it's actually making people more depressed. Going because online. Right. Well, that's it. You're living a lie, but also everyone you know is living a lie.
And everyone else seems to have this amazing life.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you log on and you're like, oh my goodness, there's my friend in Paris and there's my friend in London and there's my, and here I am stuck going to work every day. And actually we forget you can't compare, because you're not comparing real with real.
No.
Because they're not putting up the photo of themselves cleaning the toilet.
No.
Which they must have done.
No, it's really true. It's really strange, I think, what social media has done to the way we live our lives.
It's the best of us.
Which, and there are elements of that in here.
There sure are.
Lauren has a picture perfect life.
She tries to.
Yeah.
She definitely does try to.
There were so many really interesting characters in this, and I just wondered, because I told you, like, the judge.
I love the judge.
Yeah, he's such a sweet
guy. I love his wife, too. Yeah, you like his wife? Yeah, I really like his wife. She's kind of cheeky, isn't she?
Yeah.
And I wondered about her, because it seems to me that she was just as smart as him and was doing just as well, but she gave up her career, I think, for the kids. And so he's ended up being the judge. So they both started out at law school at the same time, and he's gone on to have the career, and she's had to sort of watch from the sidelines. But she hasn't lost any of her wit, and she still has a lot of input.
And he clearly relies on that. And he relies on that. Because sometimes when you're in his perspective, he's thinking about what his wife would say or what his wife's opinion would be on
him. Exactly. And I think that was probably true of a lot of women of her generation, because they're in their 70s, and so I guess that idea that you did give up your career and raise your children and then go back to the workforce is something that's a common experience of women.
Yeah.
Really common.
Well, a while back, I got hopelessly addicted to the Serial podcast.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, did you as well?
Yes, yes.
Is that something, as an investigative journalist, would you ever consider doing something like that?
Yes, although what I felt when I was listening to Serial was a little jealous, actually, because the laws in the US are so much more transparent, and they're much easier to work with. When things come before the courts in Australia, there's always so much you're not allowed to say. So how many times have you read a story or heard a story where they say, oh, we can't mention their name, or whose identity can't be revealed? Because the laws here are really strict on what you can and can't say, even when a matter is before the court, and sometimes even when it's over.
There's, like, even cold cases.
Yeah, it's really strict on what you can say. Mm-hmm. And very often there's people that can't be identified, that you can't get easy access to witnesses. You certainly are not allowed to talk to people who might be witnesses in a case.
Oh,
that's
my gosh.
It's really difficult. So, and that's the same thing. There was also Making a Murderer, which was
a
podcast, but a TV series. You could never do that show here. Never. Because you would be sued for defamation by almost everyone in it.
And then you have to wonder, is that even a bad thing? Like, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe I'd rather
live in a
society that would protect you.
But I personally am of the view that most people I know are smart enough to know the difference between TV and real life.
Yeah.
And so I can watch a show like Making a Murderer and recognize that it's just one side of the story.
And very skewed.
Yes, yeah. And it's presented for my entertainment.
Yeah.
And if I want to know out more about the case, I can go and find out more about the case, but I'm not going to be making a judgment about whether somebody is guilty or not in any significant way. I might decide for myself what I think.
Yeah.
But it's not going to skew my view of anything because I realize it's TV or it's a podcast. It's not real life.
People get really caught up in it, though.
They do, but... Doesn't matter. Like if a million people are running around now saying, I think this person was guilty or not guilty, at the end of the day, it still comes down to the court, and the court will still decide. And the idea that we have to censor everything just in case somebody might have an opinion that isn't the right one is to me a bit crazy. I mean, I would rather live in a much more open society where we could just have that. I mean, I could think of a dozen cases. So, for example,
I was just going to ask if you had any in mind.
Yeah. So, for example, there is a case, an unsolved murder in New South Wales, known to journalists as the Bowraville case, where three Aboriginal children from the same town, Bowraville, went missing over an 18-month period, and their bodies have been found, but nobody has ever been found guilty of their murders. Now, that is a perfect, perfect case for something like a podcast or a miniseries to look at each of those families, each of those children, to discuss the circumstances of what happened. Why was there no justice? Because if three white children were missing from one small town, I guarantee you everybody would know about it. So is there an element of race playing into that? Is that why it wasn't properly investigated? Is that why nobody's ever been held accountable? But the difficulty with Bowraville is you would run immediately into the problem of identifying child victims, which you're not allowed to do, talking about possible suspects who haven't been charged, which means you'd run into defamation straight away. Would you be able to get the police to talk openly about why no charges were ever brought in certain cases? It would be much more difficult here to do, which is a real shame, because why shouldn't we be able to do that?
Yeah, like, true crime books get written within Australia.
They do.
Yeah.
So, mostly after you've got a guilty verdict.
Oh, right. I was wondering how they got around it.
So right. Like, yes. Okay. Whereas in a case like Bowraville, you'd be looking at who did it. Now, everyone has an idea. Everyone thinks they know. There's differing opinions in the town, but everybody has a rough idea who they think it might be. But you could never say so.
And if you were going to investigate it with a view to putting something out there and the public, you would have to keep the names out of it.
Right.
Of it. Yeah.
It would be very, very
impossible.
Difficult. Very
That's
difficult.
A shame.
It is a shame. Yeah. And so, I think it's particularly a shame because I really honestly do believe that Australians are smart enough to know the difference between a TV program and a criminal trial.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
But so often, like, those kind of decisions are made, you underestimate the general public.
They underestimate people. And also, I mean, if you asked most people, they would say, we don't want to be like America where they have all TV cameras in the courtroom. And I think, well, I don't know. Don't knock it till you've tried it. Like, it's nice to see what's going on in court. Like, they have, in the United States, they have, like, Judge Judy, and they're like, people don't want to go that way. Well, no, okay, maybe not. But actually, let's say, for example, when they were sentencing the man who killed Daniel Morcombe, I think that the public wanted to see that. I think that the public wanted to see what the judge had to say because it was such a big case. We were all so invested in it. We were all so determined to see justice done. It would have been great to be able to see the judge deliver the verdict and deliver the sentence. But it's one of those situations where they say, we don't want court cameras in the courtroom. We're not America. So we all miss out.
Do you think that will change?
No. No.
It's strange. I've never really thought of
We just live in a different culture. Like in the States, because freedom of the press is written into the Constitution, they take it very seriously.
Yeah.
That the press has freedom to report on anything and everything. And as we know, they do. And sometimes they go way too far. Like in exploring people's private lives and all sorts. And here, the laws are much tougher.
Yeah, I guess it's once you open those gates, it's hard to draw a line.
Precisely,
Are we allowed to ask you what's up next for you?
So I'm going to write another novel, but it's still in very, very early stages. I think it's going to be another thriller, definitely, but it's still very early. I haven't quite worked out who the characters are and I haven't quite worked out which way it's going to go. It's one of those things where I'm sort of waiting to see what's bubbling away inside.
Yeah, you have to let it marinate.
Yeah, that's right. You really kind of do. Like, I think about it every day, but I haven't actually done the hard work yet.
So we've got a while for that one.
I try to get them out reasonably quick. I find if I'm not writing, I'm always happier when I'm writing.
Well, Caroline, thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. It was so much fun talking to you about it. I feel the fact that I now know that it's publication day, I feel the buzz.
Yeah.
You know, when it's out, it's
happening.
On the bookshop. It's happening. It's really happening. And it's a really nice day.
Well, and podcast listeners, Caroline's books, including her new release, The One Who Got Away, are available to purchase now from Booktopia at booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.